Hello. Welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, May 11th, 2025. Happy Mother's Day. I'm Gene, a volunteer with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We begin the second hour by reading the list of names in the obituaries. Today's list includes Robert Stephen Amavisca, Gene Carlton Whitaker Ambler, Kenneth Barker, Kevin Lee Barkley, Laddie Ray Boken, Harmon Claridge, Benjamin Philip Collins, Betsy Lee Davenport, Laura Ellersick, David Reese Ells, Pat Flood, Claudia Gray, Jean Hayek, Jean Hines, Dale Eugene James, Kenneth Lee Johnson, John Richard Lewis, Robert K. Mitchell, Marjorie Ann Mobley, known as Margie, Richard Miller Murian, Linda Louise Neuheisel, Randy Rubottom, Dirk Andrew Richwine, William J. Richwine, Nancy Jane Strubick, Thomas Herman Walker, known as Tom, Bill O. Wallace, Joan K. Westlake. Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of the individuals listed in today's obituaries. We turn now to the economy section of the paper. There's just one article, written by Russ Wiles. It's entitled, Arizona Apprentice Program Aims to Help Underserved Groups Work Construction Jobs. Here's what Russ wrote. Arizona could need a sizable number of new construction workers in the coming years. U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick alluded to this when he recently proclaimed 40,000 or so positions could be required to expand the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Complex in North Phoenix. And that's in addition to the thousands more for the new data centers, the apartments, the roads, the solar farms, the Valley Metro Light Rail, the extensions for that, and other projects. Employers and unions are reaching out to attract potential laborers, including many from underprivileged groups who never expected to land construction jobs. People like Lindsay Yazzie, a 36-year-old single mother of three in Levine, who said she spent time in prison for drug possession and once out of incarceration faced job rejections based on her background. Or there's Star Simpson, a 22-year-old Mesa resident, who at one point was living in a car with his girlfriend with a child on the way. Both are employed as apprentices at the Laborers Training School. That's an organization that recently received a grant, in their case, to help with child care obligations that otherwise might interfere with on-the-job training or classroom sessions. Yazzie and Simpson, along with other apprentices like 32-year-old Flor Lopez of Mesa, each of them received $10,000 for child care expenses. That grant was awarded through the Build It AZ Apprenticeship Initiative, which receives funding from the Arizona Office of Economic Opportunity. So, since its founding in 2023, the Build It AZ program set out to double the number of apprentices in construction positions by 2025. So far, the initiative has registered about 3,000 additional apprentices, and they expect to hit their goal of 8,700 next year. Now, a small slice of the $1 million in new grants provided in a recent funding round supports child care and transportation, which, if not needed, if not addressed, creates barriers to employment. Other funding helps apprentices pay for tuition and other more typical needs, including tools, boots, and books. Arizona has established itself as a national and international economic giant, with businesses of all shapes and sizes growing and moving to our state. That's from a statement by Governor Katie Hobbs. She added this, quote, "This influx means more jobs, more opportunity for Arizonans to access family-sustaining, stable careers, and more demand for skilled construction workers," unquote. Well, the governor's office in late 2023 anticipated 20,000 new construction workers might be needed by 2030, a projection that was made before Lutnick cited that 40,000 number that was just related to TSMC during his visit to the semiconductor manufacturing complex in late April. However, TSMC's projected need for 40,000 construction jobs over the next few years, it's not going to translate into a one-to-one increase in total employment. Rather, it will likely help stabilize or slow a recent decline in construction jobs, according to Doug Walls, chief economist in the Arizona Office of Economic Opportunity. However, Michael Dia, who is the business manager for Local 1184 of the Laborers International Union of North America, described construction employment in Arizona as strong, with more than 90% of union workers employed. In addition, many current laborers will be retiring in the coming years. Dia said this, quote, "Nowhere else in the country is there a greater concentration of construction jobs needed," unquote. Apprentice positions range from those pouring asphalt and concrete to landscape workers and workers laying and repairing pipes. So the recent round of Build It AZ funding went to 7 union groups and employers, including the Laborers Training School, which was the connection for Yazzie and Simpson and Lopez. The Laborers Training School, with offices in Arizona and Southern California, aims to expand workforce opportunities in the construction industry, with a focus on increasing the participation of women and people from underrepresented groups. That's according to Lisa Becerra, who is the school's chief of staff. Now, for some people, construction apprenticeships have meant life-changing transitions. Yazzie said she came from a rough background that included drug addiction and 2+ years in prison, and then she faced job rejections because of her past problems. The apprentice program has given her a more solid financial foundation for herself and her children. And she enjoys working outside, which is typical of many construction jobs, and she's leaning toward a specialty as a machine operator. She said, quote, "I knew I needed to turn myself around or I'd be living on the streets. It has been a blessing," unquote. So the 2-year apprenticeship program includes a 3-day boot camp with tasks such as carrying 90-pound sandbags, wooden planks, and cinder blocks, often in high outdoor temperatures. Lopez said with a smile, quote, "Don't remind me. It was hard, but I passed," unquote. Now, Lopez likes electrical work, and she might specialize in that area. As a single mom with 4 kids, she looks forward to working day shifts. Previously, she was employed predominantly at night, cleaning buses, and that made it difficult to care for her children. Simpson said she was residing with his mother when their home caught fire, destroying almost everything they had, and then came 2 months of living with his girlfriend in a car. But with a child on the way, he knew it was time to get serious about a career path. Simpson likes pipe laying, even in conditions that might be 30 or so feet below ground. He recommends the construction field and apprenticeships for, quote, "anyone who wants to have a good living, support their family, and have a career," unquote. Now, apprenticeships typically earn $21 to $28 an hour with benefits, which includes medical coverage, vacation time, and access to a pension plan. Applications can be submitted at arizonaalts.com. Requirements for the program include proof of citizenship, drug screening, completion of an oral interview. Applicants also must be 18 and older and out of the foster care system, if relevant. Other groups receiving the recent Build It AZ grants include the Arizona Chapter of Associated General Contractors of America, Boilermakers Local 627, the Phoenix Electrical Joint Apprenticeship and Training Committee, Sunt Construction, the Tucson Electrical Joint Apprenticeship and Training Program, and the Western Electrical Contractors Association. Applicants also can apply for apprenticeships through all of those groups that I just mentioned. And that was Russ Weil's article, Arizona Apprentice Program Aims to Help Underserved Groups Work Construction Jobs. At 11 minutes past the hour, we're going to move on over to the sports section of the paper. The cover story from the front page of the sports section is all about the Phoenix Mercury. The article is entitled, Mercury Driven by Copper Thomas Sabaly in 2025. This was written by Jenna Ortiz for the Arizona Republic. The Phoenix Mercury are retiring their trusty SUV driven by franchise legends Diana Taurasi and Brittany Griner, and they're handing the keys to the 2025 model to a trio of high-powered leaders. The Mercury began the succession plan before last season. Instead of using the number 3 overall pick in the 2024 WNBA draft on a younger player, the Mercury used the pick to trade for Kalia Copper from Chicago Sky. Even though it wasn't known when Taurasi would officially call it a career, there were signs throughout the season that Copper would be anointed the franchise's next leader. Against the Minnesota Lynx in an early season matchup, Taurasi pushed to give the final shot to Copper, who had knocked down a game-winning three-pointer. And when you factor in Griner's departure to Atlanta and Taurasi's retirement in February, the eyes fell on Copper as the de facto leader. The Mercury coach, Nate Tibbetts, said, quote, she was super respectful to the group last year, but it's hard to lead when you walk in with two cornerstones like DT and BG. I think you're really going to see her spread her wings and take pride, unquote. Copper's star power left her as the only remaining starter from last year's team, as the Mercury built an entirely new identity. But she won't be alone. Through a four-team blockbuster trade, the Mercury acquired all-star forwards Alyssa Thomas and Satu Sabaly in exchange for veterans Natasha Cloud, Rebecca Allen, and Sophie Cunningham. So with all the turnover that happened, the roster tends younger, with only 5 players holding 5 or more years of WNBA experience. And of course, the coaching staff also remains on the newer end, with Tibbetts entering his second season in the WNBA. Tibbetts, who spent most of his coaching career in the NBA and G League, feels like he's learned a lot through his first go-round that ended with a first-round exit. Tibbetts said, quote, there's some new feel to it. It feels a little more comfortable than a year ago. We had a new team last year. Collectively, as a group, it feels like we rooted more, but there's a lot of other moving parts. At least we know what the hell we're doing, unquote. Now, Copper isn't a stranger to the spotlight. Going back to her days playing against the neighborhood boys in North Philly as a kid, the now 30-year-old became prepared for big moments. Whether it was dealing blow after blow against the Mercury in the 2021 WNBA Finals while on the Sky, or if she was winning a gold medal with Team USA at the Paris Olympics, she's ready to take over as the Mercury's face. And part of that comes from her comfort around her teammates and her head coach. During the team's media day on April 30th, Copper watched Tibbetts' news conference in the back before posing as a reporter and asking a question about Tibbetts' conversations with Copper before the season. Quote, if you would have been here 5 minutes early, You would have heard our conversations are strictly about leadership and habits. You're going to see that a lot, unquote, Tibbetts responded. Well, Tibbetts expanded by saying leadership involves all the little things, like engaging with teammates on the bus, leading in the weight room. And so far, he is extremely proud of what he has seen from Copper. So Copper's exchange with Tibbetts wasn't the first time that she has jumped into his news conference either. When the Mercury introduced Sabali in February, Copper sat front row and asked her about who she is most excited about playing with. And Sabali joked around and said, quote, there is a wrong answer, unquote. And there's the Copper in front of the cameras. And then there's the Copper we don't see, a big sister. Copper proudly plays with a chip on her shoulder and a toughness that can't be taught. But off the court, she is lighter around her teammates and coaches. Celeste Taylor said, quote, Kalia, and they call her Ka, K-A-H, Ka's been great since I got here. She rides with me places, always wants to bug me, but she's definitely like my big sister. And it's been amazing to have someone like her. She's someone I looked up to coming into the W, and I feel like we had similarities in our style of play, unquote. That was the article, Mercury Driven by Copper, Thomas Sabali in 2025. Now there's a follow-up article, but it's written by a different person, but it's also about the Mercury. And this was Greg Moore, and he wrote this article, Mercury Coach Tibbetts, Defense Health Key in 2025. Actually, there's a colon there. It's Mercury Coach Tibbetts says Defense Health Key in 2025. This is what Greg wrote. There was an unmistakable energy at a recent Phoenix Mercury practice. Players were zipping up and down the floor, turning transition offense into a quick strike half-court set designed to create open three-point shots and layups. And the ball was moving around the perimeter at a pace that would make a room full of kindergartners look like a knitting circle. Coach Nate Tibbetts said, quote, this was a good day today, unquote. Now Tibbetts, going into his second season, has a lot on his mind. He's implementing a new up-tempo system, nurturing an ascendant star, Kalia Copper, and trying to move forward after losing two all-time greats in one off-season with the retirement of Diana Taurasi and the departure of Brittany Griner. But if Tibbetts is stressing, he's not showing it. He said, quote, we're getting there. We're not where we need to be yet. It's been an extremely competitive camp, but time will tell, unquote. Tibbetts spoke with the Arizona Republic about the biggest topics heading into the 2025 season, leaving the impression that, if nothing else, this squad is going to be a lot of fun to watch. Question. Let's talk about the approach this season, shooting a lot of three-pointers, going to the basket. That's analytics, and some people hate it, but why is it the right style for your team? And here was his answer. Well, I think it depends on your roster. At the professional level, I think you've got to read what your team looks like. We're not going to post up a ton unless we have an advantage. We're going to take the right shot. I've been super pleased with how we have moved the ball, and we want to create shots for one another. And hopefully, a lot of those are going to be open threes. Question. One of the advantages of this style is that it's so fast, I think even pros like to be engaged by playing fast. Do you see it that way? Answer. Yeah. To me, the ball has magic. When it's moving side to side and other people are touching it, you feel involved. That was kind of the hope coming into camp. Some of our players are really leaning into that with their style. Question. Is Kalia Copper's team now with DT and BG gone? You said recently it was hard to keep from getting emotional when you think of Ka's growth. What have you seen that's had such an impact? Answer. I think part of this, in this business, is you've got to connect with your stars. I know that she's got more in her to give when it comes to just leadership and intangibles. I think she's buying into it. And I think the best part of coaching is getting to know your players as people, not just, hey, you're an all-W player. Well, that's great, but can you do more? I'm really proud of the steps that I've seen her take as far as her leadership goes with the pieces that aren't here anymore. Now she's getting to show who she is. Question, is there anything you can tell us about Copper that we might not know? Answer, she's super down to earth. In this day and age, young people don't like to have conversations. She's one of those that she'll sit for 2 or 3 hours, and it's very comfortable. She's not looking at her phone. That's what I like about her. She's very engaging. Question, finish this sentence. This season will be a success if... Answer, if we guard at a high level and we can stay healthy. Question, what's something that you have learned from last season to this season? Answer, there is always change. This is a new team, a new roster, new stars, new role players. In the WNBA, the league never waits. It's always moving. You've just got to keep up with it. Question, how do you adjust to losing 2 all-time greats? Answer, I don't know if you replace them individually. You do it as a team. And I always said this offseason was a scary time and an exciting time. Those 2 had been pillars here for 10 plus and 20 years. They are Mercury basketball. And now we have got to live up to that standard. Question, finally, the league's collective bargaining agreement is being renegotiated, and most players are on short-term contracts. Do you feel any pressure to win this season to make sure that the top-tier free agents will want to come to Phoenix? Answer, I think you've just got to be who you are, try to do a good job, and come in here and work every day. Hopefully the players feel that, and word spreads. If you're doing a good job and you're about the right stuff, people will want to be here. And that was the article, Mercury Coach Tibbetts Says Defense Health Key in 25. Now, inside the sports section, we have an article about high school baseball written by Richard Obert. It's entitled, Club Team Era Poses Challenges for Coaches. It might be the most delicate balancing act in Arizona high school sports, being in charge of a baseball program. They try to keep everybody happy without compromising their principles. They carefully navigate a program that has seen the little league and the club culture creep in. Some coaches believe it is becoming increasingly unmanageable. Others feel it is manageable without changing who you are. Phoenix Pinnacle's 2025 season ended up a disaster, with season-long tensions leading to a dugout confrontation between a volunteer assistant coach and a player on April 14th. 2 of the team's 12 seniors quit late in the season. The volunteer coach left after the incident. He runs a high-level club program in which several Pinnacle players participate, including his son, who were starters on the team. The principal, whose son was also a starter, resigned. And head coach Sam Messina, a 2-time state champion coach during his days leading Scottsdale Chaparral, stepped down the day after his team lost a 6A play-in game to Tucson Sunnyside. There was division among players. Parents criticized the way things were handled from the coaches to the principal to the lineup card, citing favoritism and even bullying. The Pinnacle situation has Phoenix area high school baseball coaches reevaluating their programs. Long gone are the days of just Little League being the vehicle for young players to learn the game before high school. Now, the pay-to-play aspect influences high school baseball. Parents invest financially in their sons to play on high-end club teams that regularly travel for games before even entering high school. The club team system impacts other high school sports as well, such as softball, basketball, volleyball, and soccer. That can create an entitlement factor that high school coaches deal with. It often boils down to playing time. Queen Creek coach Michael Moreno, who led the Bulldogs to the 6A baseball title last season, he said, quote, "I do not care if kids and parents are happy with playing time. If a kid or parent doesn't like it, they need to work harder and execute better or go to a different program," unquote. Moreno said there is a certain standard at Queen Creek that is met without him having to be a disciplinarian. He said, quote, "Previous teams have set a high standard of execution here, and it is my responsibility to ensure that we meet that level of execution on a daily basis. I do not think I have changed much as a coach, other than I do my best to get better each day. Our intent is to prepare and execute each day like it is championship day. This is how we conduct ourselves 365 days a year. We have not changed that goal since the day I started at Queen Creek High School," unquote. Well, Scottsdale Notre Dame coach Brian Fisher tells his parents to fight for their sons, but it doesn't mean they can create the lineup. Coach Fisher said, quote, "I make sure my players and parents understand the difference between club ball and high school. If they can separate the two, then this will be a good fit for them. You will never keep all players and parents happy, so you do what's best for the team, the program, and the game. Communication is always key, but sometimes you will not win with a conversation. But that doesn't mean they get what they want at the end. I believe you coach kids on their personalities. Some you can get on, and some may just need a tap on the back. If the players believe in you and are on the same page, then you're doing it right," unquote. Now, Fisher said he needs parents on his side. At the same time, he educates them so that they understand how he is running his program. He said, quote, "If something's wrong with my program, I will fix it," unquote. Now, Tempe Corona del Sol's coach is David Webb. His team is the number one seed and 2-0 so far in the 6A double elimination state tournament, and he has seen the landscape change in 28 years of coaching, but not the kids. He said, quote, "Little League has largely given way to club baseball, and winning at all cost at a younger age has become the norm," unquote. Then Webb went on and said, quote, "Parents spend a great deal of time and money prior to their arrival at high schools to provide their kids with the best chance of coming in and making that high school team. So with that in mind, it's really important to be transparent for the modern coach and let parents know that high school experience is much different than club baseball. For instance, we are an academic institution. We make sure that parents know that what you do in the classroom is a direct reflection of how you handle yourself on the field is a must," unquote. He also noted that Tempe Union High School District charges a $50 participation fee to sign up for baseball. He said that's an unbelievable deal compared to what parents invest in club ball. Webb said if coaches give players measurable standards and stress the importance of consistent effort, discipline takes care of itself. Players are not always going to play well or execute the way we want them to, but if the effort is there and we play hard, I usually don't have much to say after a game. Then he went on and said, but on the flip side, if the effort slides or we play below our standards in any way, we will have a different conversation. Now, Brett Harper, whose father Brian was a World Series championship catcher with the Minnesota Twins back in 1991, is a head coach for Trotsky, Arizona. That's a club program which has different age group teams that play in tournaments and they work year-round. He acknowledges that high school baseball plays a vital role in a player's development. Harper said, quote, we have a lot of respect for the coaches who pour into their programs and communities. At Trotsky, Arizona, our focus is complementary. We work year-round with players who are serious about maximizing their potential and competing at the next level. Club baseball gives us the ability to customize developmental plans. expose players to a higher volume of competitive reps, and support them throughout the recruiting process in ways that align with their individual goals. Both platforms have value, and when they work together, it's a win for the athlete, unquote. Now, baseball coach Scott Richardson said he believes the main reason that he has stayed at Tolleson for 30 years is because he has had a supportive administration with supportive parents and players who don't mind being coached hard. Richardson said, quote, "With a strong administration and coaches that are in it for the right reasons, I think that sense of entitlement that parents and athletes have can be kept in check. At the end of the day, it is still high school athletics, and you want to give the kids a good experience. You don't want to hurt kids' feelings ever, but sometimes it happens unintentionally. All you can do is to be fair, make sure the kids and the parents understand what you're about. It's not about being a disciplinarian. It's about teaching kids to just do the right thing, respect your opponent and the sport itself. The importance of being a good teammate, showing up on time, and playing for something bigger than yourself," unquote. Yuma Gila Ridge baseball coach James Kuzniak has led his program since 2011 after spending 4 years as a coach at Arizona Western College. Lately, he has been coaching his daughter's 10-year and under Little League baseball and softball teams. So he's had a close-up look at how kids are brought up in the game at a young age. He said, quote, "Parents have always wanted their kids to play, but sometimes the kids just aren't ready. It's nothing against them. It's not a knock on their game. They just need to wait for their turn. But everyone is impatient. If they aren't playing right away as a freshman or sophomore, they are more willing than ever to transfer schools. Holding players accountable can be an issue because they aren't used to it growing up. Pay-to-play coaches don't want to risk their source of income, and most kids are coached by their parents, and not every daddy ball coach is willing to treat their child as fair as they treat everyone else. So they get caught up in bad habits that matriculate over the years because they've never been told no," unquote. And that was Richard Obert's article, "Club Team Era Poses Challenges for Coaches." Well, we're coming up on 33 minutes past the hour. We ought to move over to the Viewpoint section and read some opinion pieces. So on the front page of the Viewpoint section of the paper, there is at the top of the Viewpoint section a kind of a picture. It's a drawing, and it's got four storks flying, and they're carrying, three of them are carrying little baby bundles in their beaks. The fourth stork is flying the other direction, and there's no baby bundle. And underneath that, it's entitled "The Baby Debate." So there are two editorials or opinion pieces. And the first one I'm going to read is by Greg Moore, "Save America, Don't Have Kids Unless You Are Sure." And the other side is Phil Boas' article of opinion, "Having Kids is a Joy. Why Do We Treat It Like a Burden?" So we're going to begin with Greg Moore's section. That's "Save America, Don't Have Kids Unless You're Sure." Here's what Greg wrote. "Have you heard of the pronatalist movement? It's a fancy name for what we used to call guilt-tripping, aimed at urging young people to have more babies. Pronatalists say the nation is facing a population decline that will collapse American society as we know it. Sort of reminds me of when my mother used to pressure me about having kids to carry on the family name. She would say, 'You know, son, your sister has two, but they're not Moores,'" unquote. Well, listen, I'm sure the make more people have a point. But as a 40-something divorced father of four young kids, I can say with absolute certainty to anyone considering whether to have children, don't do it unless you're absolutely certain. Now, the numbers suggest that is exactly what is happening. The U.S. birth rate has been declining for about a decade, except for a 1% increase during the pandemic. Well, go figure on that one. There were only 3.6 million births in 2023, according to the most recent federal data. The general fertility rate is slightly more than 54 births per 1,000 females between the age of 15 and 44, which is a record low. Birth rates were down in nearly all categories: teens, women in their early 20s, women between the ages of 20 and 39. That decline has been especially sharp in Arizona, where the birth rate was down a whopping 31% from 2001 to 2010 averages. That's according to the Pew Charitable Trust. Now, raising children all changes you in every way that you can imagine, and many that you can't. It's not easy. It's not always fun. And sometimes you just want to hide in the bathroom until everyone turns 18. If this doesn't sound like something you want to be part of, I don't blame you. Economists and demographers predict the steadily declining numbers will cause all sorts of problems, including workforce shortages and reduced tax revenue for local and state budgets. Plus, an aging population will strain doctors and hospitals without younger people to help provide care. Clearly, the pronatalists have a point. But what's good for society is not always ideal for an individual. And take it from me. Once you have a kid, you are no longer an individual. Your time is not your own. Your money is not your own. Your schedule is not your own. And if you're a woman, your body is not your own. American society is going to do what it does, and it's not your responsibility to save it. And if you think it is, I know a couple of therapists who can treat a messiah complex. And your family legacy might be important, but grandma isn't going to raise your kids. She might not even babysit. Remember that, as Donald Trump's advisors are calling for $5,000 checks for women who give birth. That's nice, but $5,000 wouldn't cover formula and diapers, let alone the cost of a crib, a car seat, baby clothes, all those special lotions, doctor visits, or preschool. It could maybe pay for one of those gender reveal parties where expecting parents get covered in pink or blue powder, but we don't worry about what happens if one of those kids decides to switch genders in high school. Elon Musk is perhaps the most prominent pronatalist, and if he's the president of the movement, he's also a client, so to speak. Musk practices what he preaches as a father of 14 kids by four different women. My four kids, for whatever it's worth, all have the same mother. Now, not that I'm judging anyone else's family structure, but you can imagine my shock as a black man that conservatives are taking advice about family planning from Musk, an African immigrant with a bunch of kids by a bunch of women. Bottom line, having a kid today isn't the same as it was in previous generations. Conversations about racism, sexism, gender issues, they're vastly more complex. Public schools are crumbling. The charter school bureaucracy practically requires a degree in paperwork. And did I mention how much everything cost? I could easily spend $5,000 on basketball camps for my sons, or twice that much on dance lessons for my daughters. All that, and I still haven't bought a protractor or a compass, nor have we talked about putting money away for college. It should go without saying, but these factors only apply if you actually want to be a good parent. If you're just out here making kids that you don't intend to take care of, that's a whole nother conversation. Please don't take this as criticism of Musk or anyone else with a large family. By all means, have all the kids you can afford, but don't grow a family because the government or Elon or your mom told you to. Raising children changes you in every way you can imagine, and many that you can't. It's not easy. It's not always fun. If this doesn't sound like something you want to be any part of, I don't blame you. Now, I wouldn't trade being a father for anything, but I am not advising anyone to rush into parenthood either. Don't do it unless you're certain. And that was Greg Moore's opinion piece, Save America, Don't Have Kids Unless You're Sure. Next, we'll turn to Phil Boas' part of the debate, Having Kids is a Joy. Why do we treat it like a burden? And here is what Phil wrote. To its great credit, the 2025 Natal Conference in Austin featured a speaker who told the group to fold its tent and go home, disband. Promoting parenthood should never be a political cause, Jonathan Kieperman, who is a conservative internet personality and publisher. That's what he told the crowd. Quote, having children or not having children becomes instrumentalized towards some other goal. And what goal is that exactly? Keeping Social Security solvent? To outbreed the libs? Well, this is insane, unquote. I know about his speech because I read Madeline Kern's account of the March 28th conference in Barry Weiss's The Free Press. In less deft hands, this would have been a hit piece on the assorted oddballs and ideologues that you will find at such confabs. But Kearns also found thoughtful and well-grounded people who are thinking about population decline. Many major nations, including the United States, China, Russia, and Japan, and much of Western Europe, are producing children well below replacement, or 2.1 births per woman, according to the Gallup organization. We need more kids. Without them, we're looking at old homes and gray hair, economic and cultural decline. Former CIA analyst Martin Gurry wrote 2 years ago in the Free Press, quote, a world dominated by the old will be less innovative, less dynamic, and more risk-averse. Quote, the only way to compensate for a shriveled workforce will be through technology. But that's just what you won't get from the geezers in charge. Ingenious walkers and hospital beds may be devised, but productivity will at best stay flat. Given fewer workers and stagnant production rates, living standards will inevitably decline, wealth will be distributed unevenly between age cohorts, unquote. Well, that's a sound argument, but it will never motivate young men and women to take on the life-changing responsibility of having children. Nor will the Natal Conference. Everything about it feels wrong, beginning with its clinical name. Raising children is not a science experiment. You don't nurture families in a laboratory. One speaker, the conservative influencer Jack Posobiec, said, quote, this is a war for civilization, unquote, against the woke and the globalist. Well, even if that were true, it's not going to move the birth rate. So let's simplify. Our society is filled with legions of people who have been mothers, fathers, and grandparents who can testify to the enormous fulfillment of raising young people in this world. The best argument for having children is because it is one of the great formative experiences in life that will shape you because it is laden with hardship and innumerable delights. We need to hear more from the people who have experienced parenting to speak to its virtues, because the young people are not hearing it. Gurry wrote this, quote, from every corner of a broken culture, with monotonous repetition, the Zoomers hear their species characterized as sadistically cruel, senseless and suicidal, locked in a spiral of self-destruction. If they somehow survive school shooting massacres, viral pandemics, and Donald Trump, they will be annihilated along with the planet by climate change, unquote. The young British newspaper columnist Charlotte Ivers, writing in the Times of London, gave this generational moment a name, quote, the perma-crisis, unquote. She wrote this, quote, I graduated at the beginning of an era of political permacrisis. The warming climate is edging humanity towards oblivion, as long as the Russians don't get us there first, unquote. One of her young colleagues, James Marriott, added this, quote, pessimism is a leitmotif of our age. a plangent minor chord sounding through our culture and politics. You can follow its echoes through the nihilism of online humor, the moody, claustrophobic disaffection of bedroom pop, the boom in dystopian fiction, or through the arrival of anti-nihilist. That's a birth strike. Those are the movements into the cultural mainstream. The fascination with the most cinematically apocalyptic prophecies of climate change. The mood is measurable in the rise of emotional disorders such as anxiety and depression. A successful society must provide its citizens with a dream of the future, unquote. Well, the time has come to counter-program, to fill the internet with more positive messages that we know to be true. That the purpose of life is not the pursuit of pleasure, nor to unburden ourselves of every hard task. Those are empty calories that kill the soul. We need to use every tool in the box to tell our young people what we know about parenting. That a new baby is a burden, yes, but also a joy. And when you are fully devoted yourself to someone else's life, you may finally bring meaning to your own. And that was Phil Boas's opinion piece, Having Kids is a Joy. Why do we treat it like a burden? Well, we've just passed 46 minutes past the hour, so we're going to move on over to the entertainment section. And we're going to begin by reading today's horoscopes. If you were born between March 21st and April 19th, that's the sign of Aries. Are you feeling feisty? Well, today lands you in an emotional minefield, so mind your triggers. For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th, are you icing someone out? Pride complicates your ability to strike a bargain. For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st, are you refusing help? Attempting to prove your mettle, risk alienating those that you hope to impress. For Cancer, June 22nd through July 22nd, are you daydreaming about a certain someone? The moon's clash with Mars amplifies passions and possessive thoughts. For Leos, birth dates from July 23rd through August 22nd, you fight back, but you might choose the wrong target. For you fellow Virgos out there, birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, you are sick of this holding pattern. You are itching to move. For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, are you holding yourself to a higher standard? Another's behavior leaves much to be desired. For Scorpios, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, take it down a notch. You risk making the wrong impression. For Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates, are you considering a sneak attack? Beware of playing with fire. The universe is keeping score. For Capricorns, December 22nd through January 19th birth dates, are you feeling shackled in an alliance? Now try to stay present. Casting blame is no solution. For Aquarius, birth dates from January 20th to February 18th, it's not just your work ethic, but your attitude that is being clocked. And finally, Pisces, birth dates from February 19th to March 20th. Are you trying to do it all yourself? Please consider a different strategy. And that was today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. The first letter goes like this. Dear Abby, when my first wife and I were in our early 20s, she left me for another man. It was difficult, but I worked through it. I learned to trust again, and I remarried a few years later. Now, this may be hard to believe, but 46 years later, my ex-wife thought it would be a good idea to try to connect through social media. I knew how to find her if I wanted to, but I had no desire to relive that memory. I made the mistake of replying that I didn't think it was a good idea to connect. Unfortunately, that response led to her trying to explain why things happened in the past. It seems she didn't realize that once you dump someone, you forgo the right to be friends, regardless of how long ago it has been. Her explanation brought back much of the pain that I felt so long ago. Please let your readers know that once you divorce, it is over forever. So hopefully they won't have to deal with this like I have. Signed, Disappointed in the East. And Abby responds, Dear Disappointed, I am passing along your message. However, some people can't just move on with their lives after a divorce because they are tied together by their children. What your first wife may have wanted was forgiveness from you or help in forgiving herself, but you were not obligated to relieve her of her guilt. I'm glad you have firmly closed that unhappy chapter in your life. Now go on. Live your life. Don't look back. Our next letter goes, Dear Abby, my husband constantly tells me everything I do is wrong. He was in the Army for 23 years. We have been together for 5 years, but married for only 2.5 of them. When I try to cook, he tells me that's not the way to do it. I used to love cooking, but now I hate it. So I quit trying. Although I still cook whenever he's gone. He's the only one of us with an income, but he said he doesn't want me working because of my health problems. He had a quadruple bypass 6 months ago, and it changed him for the worse. His recovery was remarkable, but he began drinking. He no longer talks to me. He yells and argues from the time I get up until I go to bed. I'm at the end of my rope, and I'm not sure what to do. I love him, but I can't live like this anymore. Please give me some ideas on what to do. Signed, Hurting in South Carolina. And Abby responds, Dear Hurting, start looking for a job. It may give you a degree of independence and get you out of the house. Your husband was already controlling before his surgery. You need space to breathe. If his emotional abuse continues, contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. Describe what has been going on. Although you love your husband, you may have to decide if you can remain with the status quo. Those were the letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. At the bottom of the column, she has posted this note. Dear readers, I wish a very happy Mother's Day to mothers everywhere. Birth mothers, adoptive mothers, foster mothers, stepmothers, grandmothers who are raising their grandchildren, as well as dual-role dads. Orchids to all of you for the love you give not only today, but each and every day. Signed, Love, Abby. Well, we're 53 minutes past the hour. I think we have time for a couple of comics. Well, the first comic strip is Baby Blues, drawn by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott. And in the first frame, we see Wanda, the mom. She's got a tank top on and shorts and tennis shoes. She's got her hair up in a ponytail, and she's walking towards the door. And she says, a bunch of us moms are going to do a Mother's Day workout. And Dad says, fun. And the next frame, Zoe, her daughter, says, no, you said I could paint your fingernails. And the next frame, Hammy says, no, you said you would play catch with me in the backyard. And the next frame, little baby Wren says, no, weeding time, as she holds up a little book. In the last frame, Mom is stretching out trying to reach the door handle, and all the kids are pushing against her. And she looks at her husband and says, is this what they mean by resistance training? And that was Baby Blues. And in the comic strip Pickles, drawn by Brian Crane, a first frame, there's Pickles sitting in her chair, and she says, Sylvia, guess what I found? And Sylvia is her daughter and says, what is it, Mom? In the next frame, she says, it's a coupon book that you made for me on Mother's Day when you were in the fifth grade. See? And now, in the next frame, Sylvia is sitting on the arm of the chair looking over her mother's shoulder. See, it's full of coupons for chores and things you would do for me. And Sylvia goes, oh, wow. This one's good for helping me with the dishes. This one's good for a foot massage. Here's one for washing my windows. Oh, that is so sweet of you, as she rips that coupon out. And Sylvia goes, what? You don't mean... And the last frame, Sylvia is washing the windows, and her mom says, there were no expiration dates. And that was Pickles. And in the comic strip Foxtrot, drawn by Bill Amend, in the first frame, Dad gives Mom a little book and says, Mom says, well, what's this? And they're both sitting at the kitchen table in their robes. And Dad says, well, it's just a little Mother's Day gift for you. And the next frame, she looks at it and says, oh, it's a coupon, good for one full day of guilt-free, blissful TV blobbiness. And then Dad says on the next frame, well, on a day of your choosing, I will take care of all the housework and kids while you relax on the sofa watching all the true crime documentaries that you want. And she goes, aw, how sweet. And then Dad says, well, just not today. I want to watch baseball. How almost sweet, she says. And then Dad says, oh, also, next weekend, there's golf. And in the last frame, she says, maybe you should check your sports schedule and get back to me. So he looks at his phone and he says, well, actually, how about we make it 2 half days? And that was Foxtrot. Before we go, we want to wish happy birthday to some celebrities. Today, fashion designer Valentino turns 93. Religious leader and political activist Louis Farrakhan turns 92. And singer Eric Burdon with The Animals turns 84. On the other end of the spectrum, the actress and singer Sabrina Carpenter turns 26. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, and on this Mother's Day, you have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, May 11th, 2025. I hope you have a great day today. Goodbye.